News and Review. I'm your announcer, DJ Shy John. This was recorded on September 10th, 2013. I'm going to start the news today with the Harper's Weekly Review, dated September 10th, 2013. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee approved, by a vote of 10-7, a resolution whose passage in both houses of Congress would authorize the Obama administration to attack Syria for 60 days. The White House released 13 videos that showed men convulsing and dying after an alleged sarin gas attack outside Damascus on August 21st, and a deserter from Syrian anti-government forces leaked a video that showed fighters shooting seven government soldiers in the backs of their heads. Bashar al-Assad denied to American talk show host Charlie Rose that he was responsible for any use of chemical weapons. Russia said that it had provided a 100-page report to the United Nations in July detailing the use of sarin gas by anti-government forces in a March attack on a suburb of Aleppo, and deployed four warships to the eastern Mediterranean. "There is no visible path forward," said the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Sure, Assad could turn over every single bit of his chemical weapons to the international community in the next week, said Secretary of State John Kerry, but he isn't about to do it, and it can't be done. Russia and Syria announced their support for Kerry's proposal that Syria give up its chemical arms, and the 2 millionth refugee fled the Syrian civil war. "I dream," said a 5-year-old boy who had been displaced to a refugee camp in Iraq after being separated from his parents, "that Bashar al-Assad is bombing my mother, my brother, and my father." During a Senate hearing on the proposed U.S. intervention, John McCain, Republican, Arizona, was photographed playing a smartphone game called VIP Poker. "I had fun," he said. "Coordinated suicide bombs killed 60 Baghdad residents, and in Egypt, assassins tried and failed to kill the interior minister with a remote-controlled bomb." The New York Times and The Guardian revealed that the National Security Agency had defeated encryption technologies that were previously believed to protect emails, searches, chats, and online phone calls from government surveillance, in part by offering consultation services to manufacturers of encryption software and leveraging those relationships to insert vulnerabilities into Internet security programs. "I think there are legitimate concerns," said President Barack Obama, "that technology is moving so quick." A remote-controlled helicopter enthusiast decapitated himself in Brooklyn. And Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg was revealed to have traveled by helicopter to last year's Burning Man Festival in Nevada in order to serve grilled cheese sandwiches. A Croatian ice cream shop debuted a Facebook flavor. Chobani recalled yogurt manufactured in its Idaho plant because it contained unwanted mold. And a Houston man discovered a chilled dead snake inside an 18-pack of Bud Light. A drunk driver struck and killed a Colorado marijuana activist. A 107-year-old man in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, who had threatened to shoot his granddaughter with a handgun because he didn't want to move to an apartment, was killed exchanging fire with a SWAT team. In New York City, a jury awarded $280,000 to a woman whose boss called her a nigger during a lecture on unprofessionalism. And in Casper, Wyoming, NAACP representatives met for the first time with members of the Ku Klux Klan. "I'm not trying to push my issue on anyone," said Imperial Wizard Bradley Jenkins. NAACP President Benjamin Jealous announced that he would step down in December. "We've spent 5 years," he said, "in the black." A white magic practitioner on the Moldavian island of Guredhu declared an immature coconut that had been inscribed with Quranic verses and left near a polling station to be black magic free. Indonesia's health minister announced that it would require high school students to self-report the size and shape of their genitals. Spain raised its age of consent to 16 from 13, and an Indian village council ordered a 6-year-old girl to marry the 8-year-old son of a 40-year-old man who had raped her. In Windischeschenbach, Germany, a fire brigade tubist filed suit against two neighbors who had damaged his Citroen Picasso by having sex on its hood. "The windscreen was so smeared you couldn't see through it," he said. In London, where glare from a skyscraper melted a Jaguar, a woman sued her date for stealing her BlackBerry because she couldn't pay for drinks. Officials at men's prisons in England and Wales were found to be separating same-sex couples, and a Bedfordshire retiree spoke out against a judge who had fined him $117 for shampooing his semi-erect penis on a bus. "I was treated," the man said, "like a hardened criminal." This article was written by Jesse Barron. I take no claim to it. Now, on to slightly other news. I'm going to present something here from Gawker, only because I cannot get to the actual article. Now, in Gawker, the study, "Poverty Impairs Brain Function." "It's not just that being poor is difficult, according to a new study. Poverty actually makes it harder for you to think, which is unfortunate because poor people need all the brain power they can get to figure out how to get out of poverty. This study in Science outlines one way that poverty feeds on itself." Now here's the abstract from sciencemag.com. "The poor often behave in less capable ways, which can further perpetuate poverty. We hypothesize that poverty directly impedes cognitive function and present two studies that test this hypothesis. First, we experimentally induced thoughts about finances and found that this reduces cognitive performance among poor people, but not in well-off participants. Second, we examined the cognitive function of farmers over the planting cycle. We found that the same farmer shows diminished cognitive performance before harvest when poor, as compared with after harvest when well off. We suggest that this is because poverty-related concerns consume mental resources, leaving less for other tasks. These data provide a previously unexamined perspective and help explain a spectrum of behaviors among the poor." The study's authors say that the cognitive deficit of being preoccupied with money problems was equivalent to a loss of 13 IQ points, losing an entire night's sleep, or being a chronic alcoholic. Now I go over to the sciencemag.com article, and they won't give it to you unless you subscribe to Science Magazine. But I have a further paragraph here from the editor's summary. "The burden of poverty. Lacking money or time can lead one to make poorer decisions, possibly because poverty imposes a cognitive load that saps attention and reduces effort." Manny et al., page 976, see the perspectives by Vos. This would be in the article. gathered evidence from shoppers in a New Jersey mall and from farmers in Tamil Nadu, India. They found that considering a projected financial decision, such as how to pay for a car repair, affects people's performance on unrelated spatial and reasoning tasks. Lower-income individuals performed poorly if the repairs were expensive, but did fine if the cost was low, whereas higher-income individuals performed well in both conditions, as if the projected financial burden imposed no cognitive pressure. Similarly, the sugarcane farmers from Tamil Nadu performed these tasks better after harvest than before. Something to be considered. I would suggest subscribing to sciencemagazine.com or find someone who does, and let's get a hold of that whole article, people. In the meantime, that's the end of this week's Kill Radio Weekly News and Review. And like I always say, people, be good to each other in the coming week and stay out of the news.